Okay, you guys, no matter if you're training for something big or you're just trying to get lean and stay healthy, your body requires a lot of protein. In fact, around 1 gram per pound of body weight. Now, cooking whole foods is best, but I'm going to be honest, sometimes I need help hitting my protein count with clean, on-the-go nutrition that works for both myself and my family. But that is a lot harder than it sounds. I've been searching for months to find a super clean, affordable protein powder that actually tastes good, has a full amino acid profile, and doesn't upset my stomach. Finally, I found Equip Foods Prime Protein. And seriously, you guys, I am hooked. Prime Protein has over 2,000 five-star reviews because there's no junk, fillers, or additives ever. Equip's unflavored grass-fed beef isolate protein powder has only one ingredient. All of their flavors taste amazing. Vanilla happens to be my favorite. They mix well. They can be added to countless low-carb and keto recipes. You can make a quick shake with just one scoop and get a 21-gram protein instantly. You guys, that's like eating 4 ounces of steak. Every single batch of Prime Protein is certified non-GMO and is free of glyphosate and heavy metals. If you need a delicious, easy-to-use, easy-to-digest, clean protein powder, seriously, you guys need to check out Equip. You can save 15% off with my code DRFIT, D-R-F-I-T, at equipfoods.com. And by the way, every single bag comes with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't love it, send it back for a full refund. No questions asked. To the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Jamie, and welcome back to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. It's so fantastic to have you tuning in today. I have an incredible guest, and her name is Deb Bloom. She is a visionary leader and the founder of The Whole Soul Way, a transformational program dedicated to empowering women on their journey towards self-discovery and authentic expression. Through her step-by-step process, Deb helps self-led, do-it-all women break free from fear, conditioning, and external expectations, enabling them to express themselves fully, therefore creating more success, emotionally fulfilling relationships, happiness, and inner peace without losing their edge or disrupting the lives they've worked so hard to create. Deb firmly believes that we all long to be fully expressed, seen, and known for who we are in our magnificence and brilliance, and that we need to shed societal expectations to reveal our true essence. This is good for us, our relationships, and the future of humanity. As an empty nester and a proud mom and mother of a 19 and 21-year-old boys, Deb understands the complexities of balancing personal growth with family responsibilities. Deb's been married for almost 22 years, and her marriage has been a potent container for her to push the edges of self-expression and healing. Deb, welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast.
Thanks for having me here.
You know, I think that everybody has a story or an event or something that's happened in their lifetime that kind of catapults them into the orbit of their passion. And there has to be one, after reading that bio, there has to be one that has led you on this divine path. So share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and what led you here today.
Well, I feel like there are so many, and I was sitting today thinking, what's the one? And I feel like I wanted to like an arc of my life. I think when I was very little, I was very, very emotional. And I grew up in a home where the full range of emotions were not welcome, which is really common, I think, for prior, you know, I think for our generations, Generation X and boomers. And, but I was a really like a sensitive little girl, and I grew up with two older brothers, and they were sort of tough. And I don't know, I really feel like I was not able to fully be myself in my home and not fully express myself. So slowly I learned how to just, I feel like just be the person that I needed to be. Okay. And that was the first step of my life. But then I had a couple of traumatic experiences that happened that really led me down the path of doubling down on that and saying, I am a person who is self-reliant. I don't need anybody. I am tough. I'm strong. And I'm going to do things different from my family. I grew up in a blue-collar home and I was like, I don't know what it looks like. I have no role models for what I want to do, but I'm going to do something different and I'm going for it. And I just started to go down the path of like, all right, you know what? I'm going to go to college. I'm going to go get a career. I'm going to climb the corporate ladder. And I became incredibly good at being exactly who I needed to be to get whatever I wanted. I knew how to check the boxes to say the right things. If I didn't have great interpersonal skills, I would figure it out. You know, if I needed to be more capable in some area, I would figure it out. So I was just always driving myself toward something. And I didn't even really know what that was. But there was also another part of me that always felt like a little bit this longing, like something wasn't fully, I wasn't fully myself. There was a part of me that knew it, but there was another part of me that really just felt like, no, I'm just this happy, really confident, good, high functioning, self-reliant person. And I'm going to be, I'm just going to get out there. Well, I had, I think it's not that uncommon for this to happen, but I got married to a doctor. Again, check the box. Love him. Love being married to a doctor. But it was kind of a little bit of a check the box kind of thing. And then I got pregnant and had a preemie. So I was working in corporate. I was at Yale New Haven Health System, working in their IT department. And I went on bed rest, and then I am there holding this little innocent child. And I'm like, I'm not going back to work.
Yeah.
And I never went back to that environment. I did do some consulting afterwards, but I never looked back either. I honestly feel like it was weird. I was like this person who that was everything to me. And then I just left and I started
a total pivot. Total pivot.
And I stayed home with my kids for 8 years before I started building a coaching business. But when I was home with them, I really feel like they cracked me open. It was the time I didn't know what authenticity really was. If you had asked me if I was being authentic, I would have said 100% I'm authentic. I'm totally authentic. But when I was with my kids, I had nothing. I did none of my antics, none of my coping mechanisms, none of my ways of like people pleasing and trying to, make sure that I said the right thing and did the right thing. I was just me. And that started to just shift me into this place of that there might be something else available. And my husband would come home and I would just go back into all of our patterns and our antics again. And I was like, who is this person? I was like this split existence between who I was when I was with my kids and then who I was with everybody else in the world. So I did the natural thing, which is I believed it was my husband that was the problem. I completely blamed him. I thought he was the source of every problem that I had. Because look, I'm totally authentic here. You're the one that makes me unhappy. And so that was really the catalyst for me to get on the path though. Because in this time, I'm kind of just lost. Like, what is this? I don't know what any of this is. I don't know what this means. I don't know how to get out of it. All I did was felt terribly uncomfortable. And I would just fantasize about leaving and going into this like little house where I could be with my children by myself and just live my life and be authentic, because everybody else is the reason why I can't be authentic. So anyway, my husband and I went to a therapist, which is very unusual. We found a couple's therapists who really did help us, and we did actually save our marriage. And in that time, fortunately, she realized that the crux of the problem was our own wounding, our own problems from the past. And she guided us through a journey to, I would say, kind of reclaim a relationship with ourselves. And now we're now happily married 22 years later. Well, it was 10 years after that, but.
So is it kind of like fix yourself before you can fix the relationship?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
She would do therapy, individual therapy, while we watched the other person, which is a pretty powerful experience.
Yeah. So in my line of work, I talk so much about taking care of your physical being, eating the right foods, exercising the right way, get sleep. But this area that you work in is so much more, I guess you would call it like emotional or inner work. Why is this so important, maybe more important, equally important? I'd be interested to hear your opinion compared to like the physical work that we do for our health and well-being.
Yeah. I think if we think about ourselves as holistic beings rather than as the physical body, we can see, right? Because everybody knows like what if you were to ask most people, and if you ask most coaches and therapists, they would say that the thing that really is our pain is our relationships. You know, at the end of the day, that's usually what people are, why we have physical ailments, right?
It's like we care so much about what people will think of us or, yeah.
And it's the source of our joy and it's the source of our pain. And so, so we know relationships matter, right? That's a piece of the pie. We know that our emotional well-being matters. We know that when we are taking things personally and we are in that stuff or place where we're ruminating, it really is painful. We know mental health matters. Like we know that our actual well-being and our capacity to be able to navigate difficult situations and our literal mental health really matters. We know that our nervous system matters. We know all these things about ourselves. So really, to me, it's like a pie. And the physical aspect of it is a piece of the pie of our well-being. And I believe there's also a spiritual element to it, like something connected to whether that's purpose or something bigger than us. And I think that's a really big piece. And when these things are, when any one of them is off, I think that we are going to feel it in whether we do really feel fit and fabulous, you know? And I think physical is important and maybe foundational. I'm not sure. Like it might be like for a lot of women, I notice that that's where we start. You know, I know for me, it was like starting.
Yeah, like chicken or the egg or.
Yeah, right. We really don't know. But I think at the end of the day, wherever you go is great as long as it's not the end of your destination. Like, you know, you didn't get to your destination. You're like, if I'm going to be working on my physical, know that there are other pieces of the pie that also need to be considered. Yeah.
I think it's kind of like, and it's when I started the podcast, it was like, okay, which one's more important? I was like sitting here, like doing some introspection, but like hearing you talk, it's almost like they just feed each other. Like I've noticed through my journey of like regaining my physical health that it has definitely improved my emotional health and like my relationships and my resiliency. But I also think that sometimes people can't attack the physical side of it when they are so caught up in some sort of trauma or emotional burden or a broken relationship or something. I feel like it's always like one is always affecting the other. Is that a good description?
I would definitely say it's a good description. And I think that I even notice it right now while I'm in the midst of this move, our move from where we've raised our children and we've been for 20 years into another state, that I notice sometimes my physical, it falls aside. Like, oh, I'm not working out as much because my mind is focused on other things and I've got other forms of stress that are going on. And then I think, wait a second, I know that when I am exercising and when I'm getting good sleep and I'm taking care of this physical being of mine, I actually do better in all the other ways. So I think you're right that that's why I never judge anybody. In fact, I invite people do it all, but it might not all happen at the same time. Like you might need to have gone through those the mental gyrations of, well, you know how people talk about mindset? People are like, oh, you have to have a good mindset or, you know, affirmations. Yeah. Well, yeah. I feel like it's like this. I say to people, well, that's great. And if you can change your mind, that is wonderful. But usually the reason why we're not changing our mind on something is not because we're not capable. It's like, not like we're not smart enough or we're not like, you know, a good enough person or something. It's because underlying all of those thoughts, underlying the way that we take things personally, underlying the reason why we are in the pantry eating something that we don't want to be eating, you know, but we still eat it anyway. Underlying it are emotions, underlying it's the trauma, underlying it's the reason why, you know, whether that's I don't feel good enough or whether it's feeling the pain, not wanting to feel the pain from our childhood. And so if we don't go there, if we don't look, I always tell people to be a detective. Rather than being judgmental of yourself, when you're not working out, be like, look at me. I am really resisting working out right now. What are my thoughts? What are my feelings? What are the fears? What's coming up for me? What's causing me resistance right now? Rather than something's wrong with me because I can't force myself to do it, get curious.
Yeah. You know, I work in women's health and I see so many women who come to me in their 40s. They're entering this perimenopausal transition and they start to just describe like, I don't even feel like myself. I don't feel like I'm in my own body. I don't like, doctor, please, I don't care what lab you check or like whatever it is. Like, can you figure out what's wrong with me? And I watch them almost like going through this identity crisis. So for somebody listening, Deb, that's in that position in their life, we'll just call it a midlife crisis. What tools do you have to offer that can help women through this time period in their life?
Well, so it was 39 when I hit the wall from my own midlife crisis, now that I call it midlife awakening, but I hit the wall, and I would say, well, so for one, I'm just going to say, this is something that I learned, that I was seriously sitting out of my therapy office and I'm Googling midlife crisis, and it says, don't take, I'm no joke. I'm like, what do you do? And it says, the first thing that I read is, don't make any drastic decisions. So that's my first advice to people. Don't
like buying a sports car or.
Actually, go ahead, buy the sports car if you have the money, but don't get a divorce.
Okay.
Don't do anything. Just stand in your place right there. Just stand right there and say, I'm going to learn how to be with discomfort. Because if I could say that's the number one reason why we run is because we just don't want to sit in the discomfort. We don't want to sit in the discomfort of whatever that, even that feeling. The feeling of, who am I? I remember I was pacing up and down my back deck saying, literally, who is this woman living this life? Those are the words coming through my mouth. And I did not know what to do. So I say, to the best of our ability, we stand still in the presence of our life. And we recognize that this is an invitation to birth the full us. And we can either look at it as, oh my God, this is a crisis. This is awful. Or we can look at this as an amazing opportunity that I believe men get this too, but I believe women get this in this hormonal way, where it's a closing of a chapter. It's a closing of the chapter of the doing and the getting out there and the procreation and all of the things that we're biologically driven to do. And it's the opening of this opening of a chapter of, we actually can discover who we are, who we really are underneath the conditioning and the fears and the past and all those things. And if we're willing to take that time period, that perimenopausal time period, and use it as the emotional journey to reclaim our relationship with ourselves, I believe that menopause, the actual like transition period, is, and I have no evidence, and I know this is your area of expertise, but like, I've seen it in me and others. It's like, it's so much easier. It's so much easier because we have done the work that I think we're being called to do before we even get into that like really hardcore period of time of unraveling.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way about the physical aspect of it. It's just like, it's being proactive, you know, in what's happening. But you know, one thing I've always wondered too is, people are always like, well, you have to figure out who you are. Like, who am I? Who am I? What's my purpose? Like there's some specific answer, like it's like a treasure chest that you're on like this pirate expedition, that like you'll go through so many of life experiences and then you'll have this like awakening, you'll figure out who you are. And I feel like that's such a mythical thing. I think that I've certainly seen it in my own life, that it's kind of this evolution over your life, and you always get this chance to reinvent yourself. Cause I've certainly gone places in my life where I'm like, yeah, I don't like this version. Like, I'm going to go this way, you know? Is that how you see it? Like, when someone's really struggling with finding that purpose or passion, like, how do they find it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on that, because I do feel that it kind of goes to the point of like staying where you are and just grounding yourself in where you are, because otherwise what we do is we get into this idea that we're always seeking and we're never enough. We don't know our purpose. We don't know who we are. And, you know, it creates a longing almost like that. And we never really get present in our life because we're always thinking we're supposed to, I should know my purpose. I don't feel like I know my purpose. What is my purpose? Who am I? And I like to see it as more of an unfolding, and that my life is unfolding in front of me. And if I can get out of my own way, and when I say get out of my own way, it's like, I guess I would say getting out of like all of the thoughts I have about things and all of my fears. If I can get, and the conditioning, if I can get out of my own way, I can just keep following those breadcrumbs and not feeling like there's some one moment that's going to happen. Because I'm going to tell you, I have not seen that. Like, yes, some people do seem to have come into this experience with this thing. You know, like you look at like Steve Jobs, and he just seemed to have had a mission. Like, he knew he was going to do something, and that was his passion, and he put every ounce of his energy into it. That is true for some people, but most of us, you know, common people in the world, that's not true. And your purpose can change. Like, my purpose for a while was, I felt it was very much my career. I felt very much my career. And then it was raising children. And then it was around helping women and women's empowerment and self-expression. Even now, it's different than it was before. And I would definitely say, let's not get stuck on that. And the who am I? Well, I don't know about you, but I want to wake up every day and not know who I'm going to be a little bit. You're like, I mean, of course we want some stability and security, but I also like waking up and not knowing exactly who I am today. And I might be a little different than I was yesterday, and I want the freedom to be that way. I want the free, I don't want to give other people the freedom.
Yeah.
To be evolving, changing beings.
I've noticed, like, in my own life as a mom, and then, you know, as a doctor in my career, just as a woman, like, I think society so much sometimes this, like, puts us in a box and, like, tells us, like, who to be, or, like, women feel like, you know, if you're a mom, you can't do these other things. And if you're a career woman, like, you're not as good of a mom. And I think those things sometimes are just so hard to get out of our heads. And I think it's funny, as humans, like, we're the only mammal who has thoughts about our own thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, yes. It's a pun now. You sit there and think about it, you guys. We're the only people that have thoughts about our own thoughts. But it's like, holy smokes, like, you can really think yourself down some crazy paths. But at the same time, you can think yourself into, like, amazing, incredible things. I recently, Deb, went to this leadership retreat, and one of the kind of, like, mantras of this company's culture is something called pronoia. And I will fully admit, I had no idea what this was. I would have to, like, look it up in Webster's dictionary, but it's basically the opposite of paranoia. That, right, paranoia means, like, that the world around you is, like, bad things are going to happen to you. And pronoia is basically the world is conspiring for good, like, mm-hmm. good in me, you know, or good in my life. And, for me, that was, like, this kind of, like, aha moment, like, oh my gosh, like, it's so true. Like, you can totally have pronoia, like, that it's just, you know, and it just, I think, allows you kind of, like, that freedom of, like, resiliency of, like, okay, that's fine. Like, things are going to happen. Things are going to come in and out of my life. Like, but I'm going to come in it with, like, the positive optimism, like, attitude that, like, the world is really conspiring for my good.
Well, I mean, I think that speaks to, like, that part of our brain, you know, better than me, but the reticular activating system, that if you're looking for things to go, whatever you're looking for, you will find. And so,
yes.
So if you're looking for the way that the ways that the universe is conspiring against you, you will find it. You will find it. But if you're actually looking for the things that are happening that are in your favor, you really do start to see those things. And I think that's another thing that a lot of people, I really believe a gratitude practice is important for people, because it starts to shift your orientation. And I tell people, the beauty about a gratitude practice is that it doesn't have to take any extra time. It's something that you can replace your thoughts with. So when you're driving down the street and your thoughts are going negative, you can start saying, like, oh, I'm so thankful for stoplights, because my goodness, we'd get into accidents all the time if we didn't have them. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful for the, you know, the trees. And I always invite people to try to bring in one thing every day that you're thankful for about yourself.
It might start
with, like, I've got great biceps, and then it might have end up being something like, you know, I'm a really good friend and I really care about people. And when you start doing it, you notice you have a lot of things that you love about yourself. You just don't focus on it, because we're trained not to focus on those things.
Yeah. It's like, it's such a, like, gratitude is such a perspective. Like, I listened to this story one time about one of our veterans who was, he, like, served overseas, did, like, all this amazing stuff for our country, came home, got hit by, I think it was, like, a teenage driver who was texting, and he lost his leg. And, like, the people around him were like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, you know, like, such tragedy. And he was like, yeah, whatever. That was yesterday. Like, I still have my right leg. Like, I'm alive. You know, it was like, and people are waiting, you know, like, that's not the reaction, like, you know, like, expect. And it's probably because he totally throughout his whole life was just like, yeah, but I'm grateful for this, you know? And I think it is something you have to like practice and cultivate. Okay, so give people maybe, what are some other ideas for like practicing gratefulness? You said like it doesn't take a lot of time, but are there other things that you do like as a gratitude practice?
Well, I mean, I do think that if you're willing to do a gratitude practice that's written down, it actually does, I think it can really be helpful because there is something about the writing, the embedding it in our minds. And I invite people as best as you can to try not to repeat yourself, at least for a week, because it really pushes your edge. There's like an edge that you want to push up against that's not the same things every day. Because, and also get as specific as you can. A lot of times I think we get where we start doing things like, I'm just happy for my life.
Yeah. Or like real generic, like I'm just grateful for my family.
Yeah. I'm grateful for sunshine, you know, and that's great. And if that's what you really felt, but the key, I think, to partially is to feel it in your body, to actually feel a little bit of this, like some awe. If you're going to say, I'm thankful for the sun, go outside for a moment, let it just bake on your skin for one moment to just say, oh, thank goodness for sunshine, you know, and feel it in our bodies. I think there's another piece too, though. This speaks to, what's the word again? Pronoim. What is it?
Pronoia.
That it's a training of our brain to look that way. So if there's something you want in your life, to start to be grateful for the things where you actually have it in your life. So for example, let's just say it's your physical fitness. So say it's your physical health or something like that. That rather than focus on the ways that your body doesn't look good and that it's not doing well, you want to be stronger. Let's just say you want more muscle tone. Where in your body do you have great muscle tone? Because we all have somewhere in our body where we have great muscle tone. Look for the place where you have great muscle tone and be grateful for the muscle tone that you have, because it's one of those things that's self-fulfilling. So then you start to feel a little more excited about going, instead of feeling discouraged because it's taking so long to build muscle after 50 years old or something like that. You're like, wait a second, but my calves they're awesome, you know, and so thankful for having calf muscles that are so easy to build. And then we start to build that. So I would definitely say gratitude is huge.
It just made me think of something, Deb. Yeah. As a doctor, right? Patients come in and they have a chief complaint, like, right? What is your chief complaint? And then when we start interviewing the patient, we're like, are your bowels working normal? Is your bladder working normal? Are you like, we're looking for problems. And one thing I've always kind of thought about over the last number of years is asking patients, like, what is going right? You know, like, instead of like, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Like, it feels so like, ugh, you know, both for the patient and for myself. And so sometimes when I see a patient just like they're mentally struggling, like this perimenopausal thing I was talking about, sometimes I'll just say, what's going right in your life or what's going right in your body? Because then sometimes I feel like it just kind of shifts that perspective for them of like, okay, things maybe aren't as bad as I'm making it out to be. Not to like dismiss their problems, but just like kind of putting it in perspective.
Right. Well, there's this common thing right now about like not dismissing our experience and, you know, really honoring our experience. That's a slippery slope. It needs to be balanced with also the reality of the way that our brain works and that we're naturally going to get swept away by our thoughts and our experience and our feelings and our sensations in our body. So I think it is both. And you said, you know, the what's going right, that's another thing to be grateful for. Like you could, I invite people, if there's something that you're really focused on, you may even want to have a checklist for things you want to ask yourself, like, what's going right now in my life? What is it that I want more of? And what can I be grateful for, the like micro things that are already going well in that space? Like if you want more intimacy in your relationship with your partner, see if you can find the ways that the little tiny ways that there is intimacy that you gloss over and forget about because you're like, no, like he's not doing this and he's not doing that. And, you know, all of the things that, so I think gratitude, I think another piece though is, so cliche, I'm going to say it though, is like self-acceptance and self-compassion.
Yeah.
And the way that I teach it to people, because I do believe that there's a body, I do believe there's a body experience and everything, a somatic experience, is I invite people Again, I like to teach people things that don't require extra time too, because I teach a lot of things that require a lot of extra time.
It can like stress people out when it's like, oh yeah, and you need to do this and this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah. So much better to pick. And also I invite people to pick one thing. Like if I've given three, pick one that resonates with you most. But I say when you walk, like from my point of view, when you are driving in the car, it is a really great time to do these things because we can multitask because we're already thinking. When we're driving, we're almost always thinking. I mean, right, how many times do we like go from here to drop the kids off at school and we didn't even remember the ride? We do it all the time. And our brain is thinking of other things. So on the ride back, when the kids aren't in the car, pick one of these things. It's gratitude or I love hand to your heart. I love hand to your heart. Put your hand in your heart. But I'm going to invite you to do something in particular, something that we don't do. We want to be heard desperately. We want to be seen. We want to be heard. And we want to feel like other people value us and care about us, but we don't do it for ourselves. And when you put your hand on your heart, I invite people to just say, I'm here. I'm with you. I'm listening. And it's this moment that we take to connect to ourselves. It's a moment that we take to say, I know I run off all the time doing all these things and I don't really notice how I'm feeling. But in this moment, I'm just going to say, I'm here. I'm listening. I'm with you. Something like that. And
yeah, just like checking in with your body. Like,
yeah. And it might even be, they might take it to that next step further. Like what sensations am I feeling right now? What feelings am I feeling? You know, what do I need? What most of us don't even know what we need. We don't even know what we need. If we check in and we say, what do I need?
I like that. Like,
and I'm going to say that I had an experience one time where I was, I was just ruminating over something. I had a family member who I invited to come to spend time with us for a dinner. And we had a little bit of a rocky relationship and I sent this message in text and then she didn't respond back to me. And 3 days later, I'm like making up a whole series of stories of, oh my gosh, did I do something to upset her? And I'm going through the past with her. What did I do? When did I see her last? What did I do? Did I do something? And I'm trying to manage that. Oh, it's very possible that everything's okay, but no. I'm ruminating. Well, I had heard someone say something about that the deepest wound that we have is that we're not connected to ourselves, that we're always looking to get other people's external approval and we don't approve of ourselves. This was years and years ago. And now this is part of what I teach. But at that time, I remember I was in bed with my son, who's, 10 years old or something like that. I'm in bed snuggling with him, reading of a book, and he's starting to fall asleep. And I say to myself, I am so uncomfortable right now. I'm so worried about this relationship. I've got to do something. I'm desperate. So I took my hand and I put it on my heart. And I just started saying like, we're okay. We're okay. We're going to be okay. I'm with you. We're okay. Even if she doesn't love us anymore, I'm okay. I don't know. All these things started coming out.
Yeah.
I shifted in that moment. And for the next 24 hours, I was just great. I didn't think about it at all. I felt so good. I felt so good inside. And then 24 hours later, she sends me a message. Sorry, I was on a backpacking trip and I was off the grid. Sorry, I missed it. And I was like, I just spent so many hours ruminating.
I have totally done that exact same thing. It's like when you see the dot, 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 and you're just like, and then it disappears and you're like, okay, wait, now I know they saw it. Why aren't they responding? Like your mind's just like in the worst place possible. Oh gosh,
so connecting to ourselves honestly is, and I'm going to say, if anyone is doubting me right now, just keep it in the back of your mind. And the next time that you have a thing like this and you're going down the path and your brain's taking you into the darkness, if it comes up, just try it. What's the harm? Put your hand on your heart and connect yourself.
Like
it's
that.
Weird for people because we're not used to doing it. We're not used to connecting to ourselves in that way, not just physically, but emotionally. And we're longing for that.
I like that. Okay. We'll make a shift. What is inner child work? I've heard people talk about it. Full disclosure, I don't know that I've ever done it. So I think I'm about to after this podcast. But tell us what inner child work is.
Yeah. Well, so that's one step right there. If I were to be teaching it to in my more comprehensive program, I would be teaching you that when you put your hand on your heart, I want you to envision that your hand is the adult you and your heart is the wounded inner child that's longing to be loved, seen, held, accepted for all of who she is. And when we put our hand on our heart, we're actually holding that part of us. We're holding the wounded part. Okay. So inner child work is interesting, right? Because this is the way that I look at it, is that as a child, very few of us got all of our needs, our emotional needs met, maybe even our physical needs, but definitely our emotional needs. And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. I don't blame parents for it, because I think even the quote unquote best parents, the ones that are really trying very hard, we're still going to miss the mark, because I just don't think any human being can fully attune to someone as much, you know, like I'm going to have a child is going to have a need and I'm going to be busy in that moment and I'm going to miss it. And then they're going to not have gotten that need fulfilled. And I do believe that our relationships have a high tolerance for that. I actually do believe that. Like I heard somewhere, I have no idea how they would know this, but that it was something like, if you attune to your child 30% of the time, you'll create secure attachment. So that's, you know, that's probably pretty reasonable for most of us as busy moms and all that. But even in there, you know, I still think even with that, secure attachment doesn't mean that you don't walk away with any wounding at all. I think we just do. So when you're a child, the best case scenario is you end up with some attachment wounds, some relationship wounds, like mommy and daddy didn't notice when I was sad and they didn't come to me and I just was left all alone and I made up a story that nobody cares about me. But then probably more likely there were things that actually did happen. Some things in life that really did happen where you did get hurt by parents, siblings. I think siblings are a huge cause for trauma, by the way. And friends and teachers and clergy and all kinds of places where we have a dominant paradigm, people powering over us as children. And we basically felt like we didn't have a voice. And in some ways we had to be somebody for other people. I think we learn a lot of other things. We learn societally, you know, gender roles. We learn things like, you know, don't talk back to, and you know, your parents, or we learn that it's disrespectful if you have your own opinion about something. Like, you know, we learn all these things and they get embedded in us. And then worst case scenarios, we have big T traumas, you know, things that are like, you're actually, you would classically call them, you know, with, say, you know, and what is it? Adverse childhood event.
Like you're abused or sexually assaulted or what, like a very traumatic event.
Right. And a lot of people have experienced those or witnessed those. So the spectrum's wide, but I don't think anyone gets out of childhood unscathed, which means that all of us have some kind of wounding in our hearts. And then what do we learn to do is we learn to cope. We learn to defend ourselves. We learn to shut our hearts down or to, you know, get creative in the way that we get attention. But most of us, what we did learn, though, is we learned that we had to sacrifice our authenticity in order to be accepted. That's what most of us learned. And that's because our acceptance of the adults in our lives, whoever the primary caregivers are, and even siblings and teachers and whatnot, that's survival. That's survival. Like, and we are so survival oriented. The biology of the human is so survival oriented that naturally we come up with all these incredibly resourceful ways to be in the world. But here's the problem, is that when we grow up physically, we look like adults, but most of us did not make an intentional shift into becoming emotionally and spiritually mature adults. I don't know. I mean, people can tell me what they think about this, but I actually think that most of us are walking around if we don't know it, what we're doing is walking around in an adult body doing adult things and adulting, but inside we feel like young, scared children. And when we relate with people, we're usually relating from those old coping mechanisms, the old patterns, the old ways of being, basically that were designed to win the love and approval of other people and to stay safe. That's what they were designed for. Right? They were like, because survival is being approved of, being loved, not being abandoned, right? Not being rejected and being acceptable to. And that's survival in friendships, that's survival in community, it's survival in families, right? But I
hearing you say that, there's a neurotransmitter of the brain, serotonin. Obviously, you probably know what that is. And serotonin, like when I was first learning about how to like memorize all the things that the body does, serotonin is something that gets secreted. I call it the social security hormone, like it's or a neurotransmitter. It basically says like, I am safe in the tribe. I'm good in my social circle. I'm not being like voted off the island. And so many people deal, right? What's like one of the most commonly prescribed medications, SSRIs for depression and anxiety, trying to increase serotonin for people. And like hearing you say that, I was like, oh my God, serotonin, you know, like we're always looking for reassurance, like, and just, we fear judgment and fear what people will think. And it like, it really can harm us.
It really can. And when we're coming from the place of a child, a powerless child, if our orientation to look at the world is from when we were powerless, from when we were at the whims of the adults in our lives or the siblings in our lives, and our love and our approval and that feeling of safety and security came from us being who would not upset other people or being who would be loved and approved of, naturally we change ourselves, right? Because so our authenticity is a need, but acceptance is a greater need because of that serotonin, because of that feeling, because of the safety that we get from being in a tribe. So there's nothing wrong with it. I say there's nothing wrong. I never judge anybody for it. In fact, I say, wow, look at how resourceful we are as human beings. The difference is when you get to a certain point in your life, and I definitely think that a lot of this carries over into our 40s, because what happens is that we are I think biologically, we're still in that mode of creating the safety and security. And now maybe it's for our children, right? So it's still a safe. Have you ever heard of Carl Jung talks about first half and second half of life living?
I don't think I am.
No. And basically the idea is that there is this for the first 40 years of your life is about what, you know, what does life want from me? What do I need to be doing to basically create this life and create stability in my life and security and to procreate? And the second half of life living is, what does my soul want from me? Mm. And that's why I love menopause so much, because it's really a pivotal transition point for us. But up until then, a lot of it's biologically driven. Just stay safe, like build your community, build your tribe. Once you get to that place, and it kind of has a little bit of like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs kind of thing too, of like, you know, your basic needs are met, and then you can you keep moving up the hierarchy to self-actualization. Well, I believe there's been studies that have said that we kind of botched it up, and really the next thing beyond self-actualization is community, but in this new way. Mm-hmm. It's really in like true connection. So when I think about this, I'm like, well, I don't judge us for doing what we did, but can we please, when we're about 40 years old, can we please step into the emotional and spiritually mature woman that we're meant to be, which means we have to then see that we are an adult. We're a powerful adult creator. And then we go back and we look at all the ways that fear, conditioning, external pressure, stories that are in our head, old belief systems, and we start to go through them and like pretty much like baggage, right? When we talk about our emotional baggage, and we like open up the baggage and we start going like, I don't even think that. Boom. I don't believe that. No, gosh, I was afraid of that, but geez, I can make a different choice right now. I'm a grown woman. Well, how do we do that? I say we do that by learning how to relate to the inner child parts that got hurt, and we don't judge her. We say, and I think the inner child parts, by the way, there are protector parts and there are also wounded child parts. And there's also joyful, fun, awesome parts and strong parts. There's all kinds of things. But when you're looking at the two primary parts, the protector parts are the ones that have coping mechanisms and defense mechanisms. And then the wounded child parts are the ones that we're saying that she's like, oh, my feelings are hurt. And that was scary. And that person did that to me. They're both equally important to love, because the protector parts were doing awesome, amazing things to keep us safe. Maybe we wouldn't have survived if we didn't do those things. But the wounded child parts, like, I need some love here. I need a little bit. I need you to, like, what about the inner child that never ever got the message that she is amazing exactly as she is? Well, what we will do is go around. So there's a woman, her name is Margaret Paul, and she wrote Inner Bonding. And she says that basically what we do is we take our inner child, the wounded parts of ourselves, and we put we hold her in front of us and we walk around to everybody and we say, will you love my baby? Will you love my baby? Will you love my baby? And that's what we do in all of our relationships. We're asking our children to love us, to fill the hole in us. We want our family members, our friends, our partners, it's everywhere. And really I believe based on my experience and the research I've done, that once we are adults, the damage is done, but we can repair. Okay. The damage, nobody can give us what we didn't get from our parents. We have to give it to ourselves. I'm not saying that there aren't some times that you can, like, I'm not saying that you haven't had relationships. Like, we've all had relationships that have really nurtured us and healed us, but the only one you can depend on to really do it is yourself. And so I invite people to pick up where their parents left off and realize that it is our job to fulfill the unmet emotional needs that we had from children as children. And that when we do that, I can almost promise you your relationships will begin to reflect it.
That's so funny you say that, because I always use this term parent yourself when I talk about physical aspects of health. I'm like, listen, when you're a kid and your mom, I can tell you right now, my three daughters, like, did you fold your laundry? Oh yeah. And then I go upstairs and like, it's not done. It's like, dude, why didn't you fold your laundry? I've asked you 7 times to fold your laundry. Cause when you're a kid, like, somebody has to like nag you to like get you to, like, that's how I feel sometimes. But then like you become an adult and you're like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to work out today. There's nobody there to be like, have you worked out? I told you to work out. So like, I always use that like parent yourself approach when it comes to like physical aspects of your health. And now you're like completely using that same script with like the emotional, just like parent yourself. Like, okay, yeah, I'm okay. Like, we're going to be fine.
Exactly. But you know what's so funny? I literally use those words too. Like, if you look at if you look at the inner child space, they'll talk about the words reparenting. So you reparent yourself. But I have my framework is find something that's triggering you, upsetting you, say emotionally triggering you, or a judgment you have of something else, and then take that. And instead of what we usually do is we go, he did this and she did that, and why did they do that? And we vent about it and we go into that rumination. I say instead, go inside. So basically turn around, stand where you are right here. Okay. Okay. What does it feel like to have experienced that right now? And then parent yourself. That's my next step. So it's called the GPS. It's called the Soul Way GPS. It's go inside, parent yourself, and then show back up in the world as this person is a little bit more healed. And it happens incrementally. It's not like I have no idea. Like, how do we know if we're fully healed? I don't even think it matters. But I can tell people it's probably like the physical body, like a little bit of healing can make you feel a lot better. So just keep going on the path of just knowing that you can parent yourself over and over again. And a lot of people will do things like, when you think about inner child work, there are things like affirmations. That's great. You could say things like, you can read things about like, dear one, like little one, I love you. You are loved. You were always loved. And those are wonderful. And they do really start to reprogram your brain. But I like to do it on a personal level. Like, what's up for you? Because like, your wounding is different than my wounding. So I like to people to listen to, right now what I'm feeling is I'm feeling really judgmental about that person. I'm really judgmental. I think that they're wrong. They're being disrespectful. And I invite people to go in there and say, like, where have I been disrespected, like as a child? Or where am I sometimes disrespectful and I feel shame about it, that I've been disrespectful? Where did I get shamed for being disrespectful as a child? And we get to, it's a self-exploration. It's loosening up the grip that our childhood imposed upon us around that we could be bad, that we could be unlovable. And loosening that up and being the one that says, you know, I don't know if anyone else can give us unconditional love, but I know that we can give it to ourselves.
Yeah, that's powerful. Inner child work, you guys, something you should explore. I'm not going to lie. I thought inner child work was the 30-yard slip and slide that I got to do last week at this leadership retreat because I felt like a kid again. I thought that was inner child work. Maybe it is, where you like play, you know, like, again, I feel like we forget that as adults, like, to just take off the flotation devices and just have a little fun.
Yeah, I think it's part of it though. I do. I actually think play is part of it, because if we don't do that, then we are like, what's life? You know, it's not meant to be like immerse yourself in healing, work out all the time and eat, you know, eat everything healthy. It's like, well, come on. Like, we want to have a little joy here, right? So it's both.
Yeah, we can learn so much from kids. Some, like, I think like kids younger than 8, like we can learn so much from them, because they just like, they just do. They don't like, you know, and then we start to like have these thoughts about our own thoughts that start to really impact the way we, you know, show up in the world. Yeah. So it's like, look at like a little baby, like learning to walk. Like they don't, they just get back up. Like they, they're not worried that anybody saw them fall or like,
right. They don't have any of that, like feeling of humiliation or failure, right. They're just persistent and they just,
they just go.
Yeah, it reminds me of when my kids did get older, that I realized that I had to intentionally bring play in, because I was a play kind of a mom. Like I was very fun and silly with them. And I do know that I was fortunate that my inner child journey, my inner child reparenting journey started when they were about 3 or 4. Mm. And I felt like I got to almost like play with them and bring that innocence out in my own life. And I then had to bring in new practices, and I still do. I notice I'll get serious, you know, and I'm like, wait a second, I don't have anyone that's showing me how to play anymore. I have to remember to play.
Yeah, I like that. Deb, another thing you talk about in your work is shadow work. What is shadow work?
Yeah, well, I kind of touched on it a little bit when I talked about judgments.
Okay.
So shadow work is interesting because it sounds scary, right? It does sound kind of scary. You're like, stuff that's in the shadows.
In the shadows.
To go into the shadows, right? and we think it's the bad parts of us. Like we think it's the bad parts. But I'm going to give you an example of something of how it's not a bad, it's not all the bad parts. So let me first say this. When I talked about the disrespect piece of things, and I said like if someone feels like they're judgmental of another person of being disrespectful, I invite them to go inside and see what their relationship is with disrespect. That's really looking at a shadow, because usually when we're judging another person, it's because there's something that's in our unconscious mind that we were told, like, it's bad to be disrespectful. Don't ever be disrespectful. And so we have this complicated relationship with that part of us. And I invite people to just explore that shadow part, because what happens when we don't explore? Okay, I'm sorry. Let me go back. Let me tell you what I think a shadow is. A shadow is just something in the unconscious mind. That's as simple as what it is. Mm-hmm. It's something. And when something's in the unconscious mind, it means that it's in the darkness. We don't know about
follows
it.
You around.
And it, right. But what happens is, when, is the unconscious mind still does stuff in our life, right? What do they say?
Yeah.
There's a very small percentage of our mind that's actually our conscious mind. The rest of it's our unconscious mind. And our unconscious mind isn't gone. It's there. And it's always out there, like playing a role in our relationships. So the more we can shine a light in our unconscious mind, the more we have control over how we show up, instead of self-sabotaging ourselves and all of the other, you know, the things of playing out patterns and all that. So I like to think of other people as wonderful mirrors for what's in our unconscious mind. So if I'm in judgment of another person, it's usually showing me something in my unconscious mind. So let's say disrespect, I get to see, in my unconscious mind is this relationship of probably saying disrespect is bad. So let me go in there and see and ask myself questions. That's why I focus on self-inquiry, asking myself questions and going in and seeing like what is in my unconscious mind so that I can bring it to my awareness. Now you might think, well, I don't want to be more disrespectful. It's not about becoming them. In fact, that once it's in your conscious mind, you become a person who chooses rather than a person who's being chosen by your unconscious mind. So it's not about becoming the behaviors or acting the behaviors out. It's about knowing, understanding yourself in that, in the relationship with that part of yourself. But let me share with you a story of how this can go on a more like why it's not just dark things. I want you to imagine you're like a little girl and you're playing around in your family room and you're like dancing and you're singing and you've got your pretty little dress. And someone opens up a door and they look at you and they put their finger to their lips and they say, shh, with that stern tone and their eyes get crunched together and they're on the phone and you immediately have this wave of shame that comes over you. Maybe you've never felt self-consciousness before and you have this wave of shame. And immediately in that moment, you jump to some conclusions. You decide it's bad to dance and be playful and free. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. My mom or dad just got upset with me because this is wrong. So I either decide that I hate dancing. I'm never going to dance. It's scary to dance and play and sing. Or I might decide I can, but only privately and make sure nobody else is watching and make sure you're doing it when you won't upset anybody. So you come up with these stories in your head and they get imprinted in you, in your unconscious mind as a belief or a way of being. And then we get to adulthood and we're watching other people and we're like, oh, I could watch dancing, you know, a show on dancing all day long because I love dancing or you want to go to the ballet every day. But people say, why don't you dance? And you're like, oh, I can't dance. I can't dance. I'm not a dancer. This would be called a golden shadow. This is a part of you that you cut off from and you put, like you banished into the darkness as a part that's not safe to be, but it's actually part of your purpose or part of who you are. So when you see something in someone else and you have envy, I invite people to reframe envy as rather than that's a negative thing, that's just a part of you that's wanting to be brought to the surface, to be brought into your life. And it doesn't mean you're going to become a dancer. It just might mean you turn music on and dance in your family room. It doesn't mean that you even are going to do that. It just might be you acknowledge that you didn't get to dance as a child and you wished you had, whatever it is. And you grieve for the part of you that never felt like you could dance all those years. And it's about honoring all of who we are. I really believe shadow work is about wholeness. And I believe wholeness is aliveness. And I think we're so cut off from parts of ourselves in an attempt to be good girls, an attempt to not upset people. We cut off from all these parts. And I think we are suffering tremendously. I think it's incredibly stressful on our bodies and our hearts, incredibly stressful to be living according to other people's expectations and to be pretending and suppressing parts of who we really are.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard work living that way.
It's yeah, really hard.
I feel that. Deb, tell people where they can find you, where they can find your work and your program.
Yeah, well, the easiest way is really just to go to my website, which is thewholesoulway.com. And on there, you can find me on social media. You can also go up into the right hand corner link. It says free stuff. You can get a shadow work starter kit there. You can get stuff on inner child, on emotional triggers. And then my program is linked there. However, I just started my live cohort just this past week.
Okay.
So I'll be opening up another live cohort and I'm thinking about doing my program as a self-paced journey starting probably in the beginning of the year.
Exciting. Lots of fun, exciting things happening in your life, Deb. And thank you for sharing your talents with the world. I know everybody will get some stuff out of this. So thank you guys for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us your reviews, like it, share it, subscribe on YouTube, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Like always, we rely on you guys to spread these messages throughout the world. Catch you on the next episode.